Punjabi
Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Gopi Chanda Palabha Giravarir Hari. Gopi Chanda Palabha Giravarir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Jai Om Vishnupad Parabahamsa Parvraj Gachara Sotera Siddhashri Shrimati Divine Grace Asi Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddhale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namah Namasi Sarasa Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatari Sitarane Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 21. We're doing verses 29 and 30 today. 29 has no purport, so I'll just read it, and then we'll do 30 together responsively. It's a conversation between Manu and Kardama. Text 29. Yata atma britam viryam avadha pravavishyati viryetvadiye rishaya adhashyant yanjasatmana. She will bring forth nine daughters from the seeds sown in her by you, and through the daughters you beget, the sages will duly beget children. Text 30. Tvam cha samyaganushtaya Nideshama Hushutama Mayi Tirthi Kritashesha Kriyarto Mam Prapatsyase Tvam Chasam Yaganushtaya Nideshama Ushatama Mayi Tirthi Kritashesha Kriyarto Mam Prapachyase Tvam Chasam Yaganushtaya Nidesha Maushutama Mayi Tirthi Kritashesha Kriyarto mam prapachyase. Kriyarto mam prapachyase. It's Vaishnavis. Kusam Yoga Nushtaya. Shama Ushatama. Okay. Tvam, you, cha, and, samyak, properly, anushtaya, having carried out, nidesham, command, me, my, ushatama, completely cleansed, mai, unto me, tirti krita, having resigned. Ashesha, all. Kriya, of actions. Arta, the fruits. Mam, to me. Prapachise, you will attain. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda. With a heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all of your acts, you will finally attain me. Purport. Here the words Tirthi Kritashesha Kriyarta are significant. Tirtha means a sanctified place where charity is given. People used to go to places of pilgrimage and give munificently in charity. This system is still current. Therefore, the Lord said, in order to sanctify your activities and the results of your actions, you will offer everything unto me. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you sacrifice, the result should be given to me only. In another place in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices, all penances, and everything done for the welfare of mankind or society. All activities, therefore, whether for the welfare of family, society, country, or humanity at large, must be performed in Krishna consciousness. That is the instruction given by the Lord to Kardama Muni. Maharaj Yudhisthira, welcome Narada Muni. Wherever you are present, that place becomes sanctified because the Lord himself is always seated in your heart. Similarly, if we act in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Lord and his representative, then everything is sanctified. This is the indication given to Kardama Muni, who acted on it and therefore received the most excellent wife and child, as will be disclosed in later verses. Om Gyana Timanandasya Gana Jana Sakaya Chaksur Nitamina Tasma Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stabitam Yuta Putale Shratam Bupurkanamayam Vedanti Swapadanti Kam He Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshri Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Krishna is telling Kardama Muni how he can achieve Krishna and go back to Godhead. And he says there are two things for him to do. One is cleansing his heart by working for Krishna. He says, following my command in the verse. And the second is offering him the results of all actions. So this follows more practical instructions. We've been talking about getting wife and progeny and the, you know, qualifications of Devahuti and all of these things. And then this verse is in here now. It's like a reminder. Okay, you're doing all of these things, but Krishna's reminding him of the greater purpose. In other words, how he will personally become spiritual, spiritually pure, and how he will attain him and how he will serve him. So in other words, this isn't just some ordinary thing where he's getting him a wife and he's having children. You know, and even with the greater good of populating the universe, certainly a very important service, but he's also saying he will become personally purified and he will go back to Godhead. He will attain Krishna. So Prabhupada, first of all, in this purport explains this, Tirthi Kritesha Kriyarta. The verse translation Prabhupada gives is, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts. But Prabhupada explains that Tirtha also means a place of pilgrimage, so there's kind of another meaning here too. And that Kardama's actions will become sanctified, and by his presence, he will sanctify others. At first, when I read this, I was trying to understand exactly what this one statement about Narada Muni, kind of in the middle here, he says, Maharaj Yudhisthira, welcome Narada Muni. Wherever you are present, that place becomes sanctified because the Lord Him is also seated in your heart. So this is just another confirmation that the devotee himself becomes a tirtha, becomes a place that is sanctified, and because the devotee is sanctified, the devotee is purified, he's able to give that sanctity to others and to purify others just by his presence. As Maharaj Yudhisthira was mentioning to Narada, Krishna is saying to Kardama Muni, the same thing applies in your case. Okay? So the main point of the verse in the purport seems to be that one does become pure by offering everything to Krishna. And we often, to offer everything to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is called karma yoga often. And Prabhupada quotes a very important verse, 927, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, and whatever austerity you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. I wanted to read a little bit of the purport to 927, since I think it's very good and really explains this point well. Prabhupada says, thus it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstances. We hear this a lot from Prabhupada, don't we? I think in several purports he says things like this, you know, fashion your life in such a way that you cannot but help but to remember Krishna, things like that in different ways. So you will never forget Krishna. Everyone has to work for maintenance of his body and soul together, and Krishna recommends here that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live, therefore he should accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Now here what Prabhupada's doing is he's giving examples. They're saying, well, give everything to Krishna. How do you do that? How do I give everything to God? He says, well, you have to eat. You first offer it to Krishna. That's how you take care of that. Therefore, accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform some religious ritualistic ceremonies. Therefore, Krishna says, do it for me. This is called archana. In other words, because worship and religion and all these activities are natural to human beings, they're part of any civilized society. I mean, if there's no religious worship, we couldn't even call a society or a culture, you know, civilized at all. You know, if it's some kind of animal society. But most societies and cultures have some sort of religious practice. So he's saying the perfection of that is archana, our worship of the deities. Offering flowers, offering clothing, offering foodstuffs, offering, you know, everything to the deities. Or even if it's not directly to the deities, doing everything with a thought of this is for Radha Shama Sundar, that I'm doing my activities. Then he says, this means all surplus, oh wait, everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna conscious movement. I think we had an announcement today that we needed some more money for festivals. Well, it's saying right here, if you have any surplus money, you should give it to Krishna. So, very timely purport here. Mother Mukhya should quote this one under her, you know, tithing, you know, things. Okay. Nowadays, people are not very much inclined, are very much inclined to the meditational process, which is not practical in this age. In other words, everybody thinks they want to meditate, they think they want to do yoga, but it's really not practical, they really can't do it properly, They don't write, and so they get very little benefit. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day, how? By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra around his beads. He is surely the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi, as substantiated by the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So very, very good instructions here by Srila Prabhupada on how we can actually perform this idea of giving everything to Krishna. So this idea of giving everything to Krishna or karma yoga is very different from the idea of just ordinary karma. Of course, we know karma means activity or action or the results of action. But karma is also something very much involved in terms of religious life and religious practice. So it's very, very common in religious practice that people do different things in a religious nature, but really it's kind of for their own benefit. So we see, especially in India, so many sacrifices, worship of demigods, worship of ancestors, things like this, really are for the benefit and advancement of the person, both materially and perhaps spiritually. And now that's kind of your ordinary karma. But and also mentioned, of course, as always, along with karma is jnana. Jnana is the intellectual pursuit of knowledge, culminating in the idea of understanding that one is not the body, that one is the soul within the body. That's the highest jnana. But what we see in our scriptures and the writings of our acharyas is that karma and jnana have very little value. The only value they have is if they are connected directly to Krishna and to Krishna's service. So Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, is filled with injunctions that show little value in any of these activities and these religious pursuits unless Krishna's in the center. The great endeavor one undergoes in executing varnashram duties, in performing austerities, and in hearing about from the Vedas culminates only in fame and wealth. But by respecting attentively, hearing the recitation of the Lord's qualities, one can remember his lotus feet. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam 12:12:54. At the end of the Bhagavatam, at the end of the 12th canto, is kind of a philosophical recap of some of the many of the main points. So some of these same points are mentioned again about, you know, the what's really the essence of remembering Krishna's lotus feet. Then another verse, of course, very important, 1:2:8. Varnashram dharma of the human being, which does not produce attraction for topics of the Lord, is only a wasted effort. So you say, well, but Prabhupada talks about varnashram. Well, yes, varnashram is there, but varnashram is meant for the gradual spiritual evolvement of the human being and religious activity, so the society will run in a very orderly way that people can make progress on the path of spiritual life. But it is not in itself an end. It's more of a means for the society to progress in spiritual life. But the real point is service to Krishna. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. He says, therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord. And any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said herein to be simply a waste of time. So sometimes, and it's kind of like a litmus test or something, we say, is this activity valuable? Is this activity something we should be doing? Well, does it help us increase our devotional service? Does it help us hear and chant? Does it help others to hear and chant? To help others to somehow to serve Krishna? And that's what gives things value. So of all the different practices, the process of bhakti yoga is the true abhideya. Of course, the abhideya is the sadhana to reach Krishna. Once one has understood one's position in relationship to Krishna, that Krishna is God, he is the master, and I am servant, which is the first step. Then one comes to abhideya, which is how does one serve Krishna? How does one advance in Krishna consciousness? How does one achieve this, achieve Krishna? And once one knows that this is the goal, what are the activities? And that's bhakti. Bhakti is the true abhideya. In fact, this is such an important point that in the Bhakti Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami spends practically the first half of the book just establishing bhakti as the highest practice and the highest process. He has verse after verse after verse. If you read that, there's no question in your mind. Yes, bhakti is certainly above any other process. So he establishes the supremacy of bhakti, that it is the really only practice that's going to lead to the highest result. And he explains that other processes may help one on the path of bhakti. They can be useful, but only to the point that bhakti gives, but only bhakti will give them the real purpose and the real value. So in other words, if other processes are used to help us get to the point of bhakti or to serve bhakti, they're all right, but they're really not the path. Going back to 12:12, Bhagavatam, verse 54, it says, the great endeavor one undergoes, executing varnashram duties, performing austerities and hearing from the Vedas, culminates in fame and wealth. Okay, yeah. It was so good, I had to read it twice. Okay, so the difficulty with even pious acts is what? They don't purify the heart. And that is the point of this verse, that it is by Kardama Muni's acting for Krishna and following Krishna's instructions that his heart becomes purified to the point that he will be able to come back to Krishna. So to purify the heart is not an ordinary thing. It's sort of a very advanced spiritual practice. And of course, advanced spiritual practice is bhakti. And that is how we actually purify the heart. In the first three chapters of Canto 6, you know, are very, very interesting because this is the story of Ajamil. And I think the first chapter narrates the story of Ajamil and how at the end of his life, he called his son's name Narayan. And because he named his son Narayan, when the Yamadutas came to take him away because he had performed many sinful activities in his life, the Vishnudutas came, and they instructed the Yamadutas, particularly in the second chapter, about how this wasn't proper because he had chanted the name of God, and therefore they couldn't take him. So the Yamadutas were a little bewildered, and they went back to their master, who was, of course, Yamaraj. And Yamaraj instructed them further in the third chapter about the process of devotional service and the process of chanting the holy names, etc. Now, it's in 6:17, it says, although one may neutralize the reactions of sinful life through austerity, charity, vows, and other methods, these pious activities cannot uproot the material desires in one's heart. However, if one serves the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, he's immediately freed from such contamination. So we hear from a different perspective, a different point of view, a similar message, that to become purified, we need to chant the holy names, and we have this wonderful example of Ajamil that's given to us in the Bhagavatam. This process of offering everything to Krishna, sometimes it's also referred to as Yukta Vairagya. And of course, this was very well-known principle, among the main principles that Rupa Goswami gave us in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. In Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, first in 1.2.2.5.4, he says, if a person has a taste for worshiping the Lord, even if he has strong material attractions, those attractions will be, for the most part, destroyed during sadhana without resorting to vairagya. So why does he say this? Why would he be concerned about resorting to vairagya as an alternative to one's strong sadhana? Well, Jiva Goswami, in his commentary of that verse in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, says, vairagya is condemned, is the word he says. Vairagya is not the preferred method because, he says, one's heart will become hard. In other words, too much austerity, too much vairagya will harden the heart if that's one's main practice. You know, just doing severe austerities and all these sorts of things, it's really not that good. It just makes one's heart hard. So, but he also says, but without vairagya, if one is filled with material desires, how will they be overcome? If there's not some austerity, how do we overcome material desires? And of course, in 1.2.2.5.5, the next verse, Rupa Goswami gives us the definition of Yukta Vairagya. He says, the vairagya of that person who employs objects suitable for devotional development while remaining detached from them is said to be suitable by bhakti. The object should be persistently related to Krishna. And another explanation, or another translation Prabhupada gives from a lecture, Prabhupada says, Rupa Goswami says that as long as we're in this material world, we have to act. We cannot cease acting, right? We all agree with that. Therefore, if actions are performed and the fruits are given to Krishna, then it is called yukta vairagya. So real renunciation is not rejecting everything, not overindulging in austerities and penances, but real renunciation is accepting those things favorable to devotional service. So, of course, what are those things? We all have to look within our own life, and we have to find those things which are helping us in Krishna consciousness. Of course, fortunately, many of those things are given to us by Srila Prabhupada and by the Acharyas. We know the practice of sadhana bhakti. We know those things which are going to be valuable, hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. But basically, the general rule is given in Hari Bhakti Vilas, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anukulyasya Sankalpa Pratikalyasya Varjanam. Accept those things favorable for Krishna devotional service and rejection of unfavorable things. So that's the practice. But when we're talking about purification from our sinful activities and from our past karma, this is only the beginning. This is not the real purpose of bhakti. It's only the beginning. It's only the first part. The real benefit of bhakti, well, we'll read from Ancha 3.177, Haridas Thakur. Says, some say that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is free from all the reactions of sinful life. And others say that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one attains liberation from material bondage. Two important things, obviously. Haridas Thakur, however, said the desired result of chanting the holy name of the Lord is not being liberated or free from reactions. The actual result of chanting the holy name of the Lord is one awakens his dormant Krishna consciousness, his loving service to the Lord. Okay. And the other things are only byproducts of chanting. And then he explained even the process of Namabhasa, the awakening of the holy name. He said, even before one's chanting of the holy name is pure, one is freed from all sinful reactions, and when he chants purely, he becomes a lover of Krishna. So this is the power of the holy name, the power of devotional service. Excuse me. Even in the Namabhasa stage, or the clearing stage, before one becomes completely pure, even then, one gains great benefit. One becomes actually freed from the reactions of past sinful activities when he begins the process of chanting and devotional service. You know, so even in the beginning, of course, there is great benefit. And this is also described in the, let's see, where I'm not sure where it is, in the Nectar Devotion, where there's, the six benefits. Or, a devotional service are given by Rupa Goswami right in the beginning, in about the second or third chapter. You know, it says, and where the first one is one, or benefits, or the symptoms. The first one is that one becomes free from sinful activities. And then there's all auspiciousness and these things. And these are just at the beginning, because the first two are at the process of sadhana, of the six that he gives. So that freedom from past karma is immediately something there that is for the devotee. But although we are in this, as long as we are following the principles and following the spiritual master, we are in this very wonderful state of being under the internal potency of the Lord and being protected by Krishna. Still, sometimes our advancement might be gradual. It's not that we immediately become, fully self-realized as soon as we chant Hare Krishna one time. It could happen, but for most of us, not. For most of us, it takes some time. In the Bhagavatam 11:14:26, that's a 14th chapter is really a nice chapter of the 11th canto. It's about devotional service. It says, to the degree that the Atma becomes purified by hearing and chanting my glories, a person is able to perceive my real form and qualities and experience their sweetness, just as the eye, when smeared with special ointment, is able to see finer objects. So as our hearing and chanting becomes more purified, we will be able to see Krishna directly. We will experience the form, qualities, and sweetness of Krishna as we advance in the purification of our chanting. So even at the stage of sadhana, Krishna protects the devotees and helps us to advance. Krishna is very merciful to his devotees. Krishna does not spend an undue amount of time necessarily thinking about dealing with the non-devotees in the material world. Why is that? Because they're under the control of the material nature. They're under the control of his agents, of the demigods, under the laws of karma. It's fairly mechanical, right? In other words, Krishna rarely intercedes with the sort of mechanical workings of the material world, the material energy, and people's progression through different lifetimes of their material sojourn here. However, for the devotees, it's very different. Krishna takes a direct interest in his devotees. Krishna takes care of those devotees and protects those devotees. And he understands that we may not always be perfect, that we've been in this material world, particularly those of us who somehow were born in Kali Yuga in this very materialistic society. It's difficult. It's difficult to immediately come to the point of purification. So, Krishna says, let's see, what that's 11:14-18. If my devotee has not fully conquered his senses, he may be harassed by material desires, right? But because of his generally strong bhakti, he will not be defeated by sense gratification. Right? So a very strong assurance of Krishna. I find it very reassuring. Even if we have some desires for sense gratification, if we have a strong sense of bhakti and performing our sadhana, we will not be overcome. Krishna gives us that assurance of protection. The next verse is, O Uddhava, just as the blazing fire turns firewood into ashes, similarly devotion to me completely burns to ashes sins committed by my devotees. So again, the purification process, the cleansing of the heart is there for the devotees. And one is able to surrender more and more as one progresses. And the highest surrendering of everything, of offering everything back to Krishna, is called Atmanivedanam, offering everything, the very self. It's explained by, I know Jiva Goswami and Bhaktisiddhanta talks about this means offering the very one's very self. I mean, what is the self? It's who we are. It's our existence. But we have no existence without Krishna, right? When you think about it, what are we without Krishna? We wouldn't exist. Because we're part and parcel of Krishna, Krishna is everything, and we're part of his energies. We're his, Tatashta Shakti, we were hearing, or the Jiva Shakti. Because of Krishna, we are here. And that's eternal. And that's the way it is. It's not going to change ever. So we have the opportunity to reconnect with Krishna. We're like the drops of water in the ocean, or we're like the sparks of fire. But we're like the sparks of fire that have kind of gone out. Sometimes they pop, but they go out of a bonfire or something, and they go out on the ground, and eventually they just kind of go out, right? Because they're away from the fire. But when we return to that great fire of Krishna consciousness, then the little individual sparks glow brightly and have real valuable and real meaning and are very, very dear to Krishna. All of us are very dear to Krishna. And of course, Bali Maharaj was the great exemplar of Atmanivedanam. He was put in great distress. Sometimes we think about it, he was there with Vamanadeva, and he had this pastime of Vamanadeva, doesn't seem that distressing. But when you think about it, he was defeated by him. Everything was taken away. His whole universe that he had conquered was taken away. His pride, his dignity was taken away. Everything was. He was bound up in ropes. And then, of course, we all know what happened. Vamanadeva asked for 3 steps. The first step covered the whole world, universe. The second step penetrated the outer levels. His toe broke through the universe. And, of course, the Ganges comes down, So he covered everything. He says, where do I put my third step? You promised me three steps. He bows down, and Krishna puts it on his head. So that was complete surrender of his self. And of course, the result was that in his planet, I think it's in Patala Loka, isn't it, or somewhere. Anyway, in his planet, which is kind of like a heavenly planet, but not quite a heavenly planet, Vamadeva is his gatekeeper. Krishna actually serves him. And that is the wonder of devotional service. The wonder of Krishna consciousness is that our surrender to Krishna, we are not the loser. We are the winner. We are the gainer. Because Krishna also wants to serve his devotees. Krishna wants to love his devotees. He wants our love, and he wants to give us his love, which is obviously far greater than what we can give. So Krishna gives us so much if we just make a few steps to surrender to him. So fully surrendering at every moment can be difficult, even for devotees, because our material nature, our conditioned nature, is to be independent, to want to be in control. And of course, that is why we are here, why we have left the spiritual world, to want to be independent, to try to enjoy, try to experience things on our own without the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, so it's a process to get back. And in the Madhurya Kadambini, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says there's two kinds of devotional service, which is, it's one way of designating it. He says there's devotional service with Shraddha, which means with full faith, and there is Mishra, which is mixed. And what is it mixed with? Karma and Jnana, usually, or yoga, you know, these things. Usually for us, a lot of times, I think it's mostly karma for us, material desires. So we're doing devotional service, we have some material desires, and we want to get to the position of Shraddha, or full faith. And that faith is often tested. And for the devotee, it means that we need to have confidence, no matter what happens to us, that Krishna is our friend, Krishna is my well-wisher, Krishna knows my heart, he's in my heart, he's giving direction, he's giving support, he's giving his mercy. And we have great faith in God's plan and God's direction. All right? So the purification of heart takes some time. That's the practice of sadhana bhakti, the hearing and chanting. But that faith will also grow in association of devotees, a sadhu sangha, from hearing and chanting. And eventually the faith becomes strong to the point where we are able to give up everything to Krishna. So even if we're not fully pure, the path is pure. The process is pure. The Vaishnava scriptures are pure. The spiritual master and the acharyas are pure who gave us all this. So we are on the pure path of devotional service. So we're performing we are performing pure devotional service. But yet we are not quite pure yet. But that will come. It's just a matter of time separating us, if we continue on this path. Okay, we'll stop at that point. Are there any thoughts, comments, questions? What else? Trivikram Prabhu?
Hari Bol. Thank you for the wonderful class. A comment and a question. Nagaraj Prabhu was giving class a few days back, and he was wondering what is Brahmavarta, where it is, and if, whether it's in Brahmaloka or not. Well, it's clearly stated in the Manu Samhita that from the Saraswati to the Drishvati, or Drishvadi, that tract of land is called Brahmavarta. See?
Okay.
And it stated there, let the Brahmanas live there. So anyhow, Manu, it seems like Manu was living here. So one point. The question now is, I was thinking that Varnashram helped to organize society in a better way so that the people could be able to serve Krishna better. What do you think about
it? Say that again. Varnashram is what?
Varnashram helps to organize society in a proper way, so yeah. that they can the people can able to serve Krishna,
right,
in a better way.
Yeah, it's for it's so people the society can be organized in a way that religious principles are followed, and there is gradual development of the whole society towards Krishna consciousness. It's understanding that everyone won't be, you know, a complete devotee at once, especially in Kali Yuga. But if things are organized well, then everyone is making some progress to that point. All right. Okay.
I was thinking that I was studying a little bit about Varnashram also. By the way, your explanation on the detachment is very nice, appealing, Jukta Bhairagya and Phalgu Bhairagya. But I remember a little quote of Prabhupada. He says, renunciation is the result of genuine spiritual emotion. So more we are attached to Krishna Seva or chanting here, dancing, honoring prasadam, Seva to particular department, then natural detachment will develop.
Right.
It doesn't have to be artificially right. adaptive.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the Varnashrama, I was thinking that we are born with a particular, I'm born with a particular nature, psychophysical nature. Mm-hmm. And Varnashrama provide at the least uncomplicated way according to my psychophysical nature that gives me time-wise spiritual advancement, you know, like, so that's why the ashram is there.
Mm-hmm.
Progression in, I would say, time-wise spiritual commitment, by committing spiritual advancement, it shows, okay, this time to this time, you're this ashram, this time to this time. And so time-wise spiritual progression is necessary,
right.
and
right.
I think everybody should do. But I was going to ask you a question about your view about Vanaprastha, which I don't see much. Maybe I am not looking.
No, I think it's not. It doesn't develop well.
Yeah,
it isn't very developed.
Some kind of a clue. Like,
I mean, the only people, only devotees I've seen that are calling themselves Vanaprastha are usually just that they're wearing saffron and they've just been in household life and now they're kind of renounced. I mean, it's not really what Vanaprastha, because Vanaprastha originally was a husband and wife together, becoming renounced, and then that got them ready for sannyas, is the fourth stage. No, it's something we have not developed in our society, which we probably should. Although, the problem is that some of these practices are difficult to translate into modern society. I mean, vana means woods, forest, right? So it means going to the forest. Well, most people probably won't go to the forest, you know, but there must be an equivalent of that. In other words, how would we accomplish the same thing that going to the forest would in our modern society? Those are the things to think about.
Well, like you are spending so much time, I'm assuming, in the Shastra. This is Vanaprastha.
In what?
Because there's a verse in 11th canto, Tapo Iksho Banav Kasha. Two things Vanaprastha develop, that they voluntarily take some additional service that they would not do before.
Mm-hmm.
And they develop, Iksho means they develop a very sharp discriminating power. What will bind me, what will liberate me, and they would act on it, become an exemplary. So these two things was like prominent.
Yeah.
So I thought in our such a big society, there should be some kind of...
it isn't really, I don't see it addressed much. Was there another question in the back? Did you have a question?
Is it true that, like in the Varnashram, that like if the head of the society is Brahmanas or Krishna conscious people, and then like the like let's say like there's a class of sudras, but they're not Krishna conscious. The sudras, they'll still receive benefit by doing service, kind of up the line, or.
That's true. Although, sudras could also be Krishna conscious. There's no restriction on anybody in any ashram or in any varna from being Krishna conscious. In fact, we have several. I was just seeing some verses today when I was preparing for class or reading. Jiva Goswami was quoting some of these verses, things like, if a dog eater is qualified, then he is above. If he believes that Krishna is serving Krishna, then he is above a Brahmin who is not serving Krishna. So in other words, it's not so strict. There can be a lot of flexibility. It really is, the main thing is that it depends on quality, not on a person's birth, but a person's qualities. And a person should, work according to his qualities. And, the truth of the matter is most people are happy when they're working according to their, psychosocial nature, according to their propensities, right? Yes. Sometimes I think our modern, in America, we really push higher education practically on everybody, right? Like, everyone should go to college. I don't agree that everyone should go to college. Some people would be much happier if they got a good trade, got a skill, went to trades and learned how to do something using their hands or whatever. They'd be happy doing that, and probably make more money than the person who went to college, So, in other words, but one of the points that you did make was everybody is protected by this Varnashram society, and everyone should be benefited. So in other words, the rulers, the management class, the Kshatriyas, and the intellectual class, the Brahmins, they have to make sure that all the classes are taken care of and are supported, right? Okay. All right, Jai, thank you all
hello.
Very much. You have one?
Yeah. Okay. No, last question. You told the faith was developed automatically with the association of devotees. I need something to elaborate on association of devotees.
I'm having trouble hearing you. Can you speak?
No, the faith was developed by association with the devotees. I want elaboration, the association of devotee, in the sense of what I have to do with the devotee, what kind of activities. Could you please elaborate that?
Can you elaborate more on developing faith on the association?
Activities?
Whoever we associate with, or whatever association we have, is going to influence us, right? It's described in the Bhagavatam, things like just as a crystal reflects light. So in the same way, actually even Hiranyakasipu said this, whatever we associate with, then our consciousness is going to reflect that association. So if you, for instance, you wouldn't be, but let's say if I decided I wanted to hang out in the bars all day, all night, and I wanted to go down to the bars in Gainesville, and I don't even know where they are. I'm sure there's some down there, and kind of hang out with all those people. And actually, after a while, what would I do? I would start drinking, probably by that association, because everyone else is doing it, and they're having a good time, I'm thinking. And, right? So in other words, whatever association is, we'll tend to reflect that. Now, if you're associating with people who are strong-minded in Krishna consciousness, who have faith, then your faith is going to naturally increase by that association. So it's just kind of a natural psychological principle. But then there's another little higher principle. I don't know, there's something kind of, like when you're talking about like the spiritual master and the pure devotees, it's almost a mystical kind of thing where that level of purity and Krishna consciousness will go into our hearts, right, and help us to become stronger and give. Because I just remember, and I'm sure any Prabhupada disciples are here, was the same thing. Whenever we were around Prabhupada, there wasn't any question of, did I have faith, right? It was almost like automatic, of course. It's like, if you're there with Prabhupada, you believed everything he said, and, you just felt like, so you felt your faith very strong. But you have to have that same faith, you know, not in the presence of the spiritual master. In other words, by remembering the words, the instructions, you know, of advanced devotees and the acharyas.
I can, the activities, I can chant with the devotees, association of devotee, mean I can chant with the devotee, or...
You can chant with a...
I'll chant with the devotees, yeah. and that is also one type of association.
Oh, of course. That's one of the best associations. That's called Sankirtan. Devotees coming together and chanting the holy name. That's the process. Very, very powerful.
Okay, Kirtan.
Kirtan, yes. Okay. All right, Jai. Of course, Prabhupada.